Ball in Play 2, presented by DraftKings, kicks off on May 5th. Head over to the Warehouse Games channel to catch Game 1. Get some skin in the game and download the DraftKings app right now. Don't forget to use our promo code WAREHOUSE. That's promo code WAREHOUSE only at DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours.
Okay, welcome back to Talkin' Knicks. I'm Tom Piccolo, recording this the day after the Knicks escaped. They escaped with a Game 2 victory over the Miami Heat, 111-105. The win tied the series at 1-1. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have a few days to digest it, to talk about it, to mull it over, because Game 3 is not until Saturday in Miami. So we're going to talk about it. Let's talk about the most maybe gut-wrenching win of the season. Yep. Let's talk Knicks.
Bang.
All right. I am joined in studio here today by Big Baby David, my co-host, our producer. BBD, what's going on?
Tom, Knicks are back. But good win. I'm happy. Well, ugly win.
Yeah.
Really.
And that's what I want to know. So I
but that
to know.
Feels good. I haven't felt this maybe ever. Like, the Knicks, like, got away with a big win despite not doing all that much to earn it. Obviously, we'll talk about how they got to that and what they did do well in this game. I got to say, before we get into breaking down, like, city's alive for the Knicks a little bit. I had not one, but, like, two run-ins on the street today, including one as I went and got this coffee, one on my walk in today, and one just before we recorded this at 2:30.
And for people on the podcast, BBD is wearing his Jeremy Lin.
Wearing my Jeremy Lin Knicks jersey. One guy on the walk-in, he had a Knicks hat on. We made eye contact. We gave, like, an affirming nod to one another at, like, 8 a.m. today. So that was a cool moment, a little smile, a little nod. And then a mailman outside, while I went and got my coffee, we chatted Knicks for a good 5 minutes. And how bad we'd like one in Miami. So, like, everything that like everyone's uncles said about the Knicks and the pulse it gives to the city is I felt that for kind of the first time today in my life.
Seeing it firsthand. I love that. And I was wondering if how you felt while watching this game was different than how you feel now, kind of like, you know, almost a day removed. Because when I was watching the game, I was pretty on edge the whole time and like pretty angry. I was like pretty angry with like the Knicks kind of lack of attention to detail and some of these blown assignments, specifically on defense. Mm-hmm. I was really disturbed, frankly, and some of my tweets reflected that. But now I feel much better. So I was wondering if you had a similar sensation.
Very, very similar. Definitely a lot of frustration, not executing the little things. Felt like a lot of rebounds that were like in hands, just not getting executed, and given a lot of Miami players a lot of open looks and poor execution in a lot of facets of the game last night. But now that they've gotten this win, you sort of got away with one. Even after losing game one as well, I'm kind of back to just how I felt at the beginning of the series, especially if they can get one in Miami, which we'll talk about the importance of that, I'm sure, towards the end of this episode. But I'm back to feeling overall fairly confident.
And I guess, so the headline of this one was that Jimmy Butler was out with a sprained ankle that he sustained in game one. And he stayed on the floor during that stretch after he sprained his ankle and helped secure a win for Miami. But he sat out game two. And on the other side, Julius Randle was back in the rotation. Mm-hmm. He started. And Jalen Brunson, who was questionable with an ankle injury as well, he also played. So the Knicks came in with, you know, their full healthy, like healthy with an asterisk, I guess, but their full roster playing on the floor.
Their full complement of players.
And the Heat missing their superstar. And so I think coming into this game, obviously no wins in the playoffs are easy, but we know Miami has a bunch of undrafted guys. Like these are guys who are through and through role players, and they really go as Jimmy goes. And so I wanted to see the Knicks come out with like some respect for their opponent and really just take it to them. And I wanted, you know, I wanted Brunson and Randall to be sitting for most of the fourth quarter. I wanted them to be like, be able to put their feet up and relax. And that wasn't what happened at all.
Even with the Butler injury, I mean, yeah, there's pressure on the Knicks to make sure you get a win in that case, because if they had lost and gone down 2-0 at home and one of the games they didn't even use Butler, then yeah, this team's cooked. But when they have this many undrafted guys, they're missing their best player who very much is the engine of their team. You want to just like keep them from doing the things they are known to do well, and they did not do that.
Yeah, when you're a team that's missing their star in the playoffs, you want to introduce as much variability as possible, and part of that is going to be jacking up a lot of threes, right? Because if those threes fall, even just for one game, you can be technically the worst team and still get the win. Yeah.
You get enough of those, you get enough open ones, like NBA guys. You got a decent shot to hit enough of them.
Any given night, anything can happen.
And I suppose they did hit enough of them.
Well, certainly in the first half, they were really hitting. And I think that New York's their three-point defense was really bad. It was it was really tough to watch. I've got the stats here. The Heat were 10 of 26, about 38.5% in the first half. It felt like, frankly, more than that. But you know, Gabe Vincent and Kevin Love were both a little. And Kevin Love was off for kind of the whole game. But, I would say that the Knicks, when I used to talk about, like, attention to detail, they were, like, really biting on pump fakes, allowing dribble penetration, leading to kickouts. They were, you know, over-helping on matchups that didn't require this kind of over-help. I just thought that it was, like, kind of sloppy, and there wasn't a lot of trust in each other on the defensive end. Like, this team didn't have Jimmy Butler. There weren't a bunch of guys you needed to send double teams to that you needed to like shade all the way over to help. And frankly, I thought that Tibbs could have gone to a more switch heavy scheme on the perimeter, like between Gabe Vincent, Caleb Martin, Max Strus. Like, who really cares which one Jalen Brunson's guarding? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
you should be able to
survive it.
If the guy who hits the shot happens to be the one he's guarding, okay.
Like, right, but at least
they're all about the same in your
hand,
head.
At least there's going to be like a hand in their face. Instead, there were like miscommunications and just kind of like schematic reasons for guys being wide open. And so that was pretty frustrating, and I thought that they cleaned it up more in the second half. Not right away. The third quarter started a little shaky. Mm-hmm. But I mean,
which did not feel good at all.
Felt terrible. Like, yeah, it felt
you'd
like
think coming out of the half is when a change was going to happen. So when like the first like full minute or two after it continued going bad, you get very scared.
I mean, we said it before. It was essentially a must-win game. Like, you lose this game, there's no chance you're going to be able to take this series. And so all the pressure was on the Knicks. I also thought it was interesting that Tibbs started Josh Hart in this game. You know, we don't know entirely how Quentin Grimes, what his health is like, but we do know that, like, overall, he played a lot of minutes in this one. He played 26 minutes. Yeah. I think for game three, you know, we saw Grimes with that starting unit close this game, and he just has a level of chemistry, and his role fits with that group, right? Because you've got guys who are very ball dominant, who are very shot happy. You've got your Jalen Brunsons, your Julius Randle came back. I want to talk more about him. RJ Barrett started this game on fire, and actually Grimes played instead of him down the stretch in crunch time. Yeah. But
Someone
had to come out, and I think that Grimes just is a better fit, and the Knicks bench has been atrocious in this two game series so far. So, like, I mean, how many points did they get total from their bench? It was 12. They got 6 from Quickly, 3 from Hartenstein, who played an awesome game, and then 3 from Grimes as well. Grimes missed both of his threes. Quickly missed all 4 of his threes. I mean, and Toppin gave you nothing in this one.
Only 2 shot attempts, 2 airballed threes.
And defensively, he was just getting targeted. He was really bad. So that's why I think, like, I don't want Josh Hart to play less. Like, you don't look at this game and think, oh, Josh Hart needs to play less. It's just same number of minutes, but in different stints to help balance out
different collections of guys.
the bench desperately needs his spark, and I think that it would benefit everyone. So let's go back to a little bit of the beginning. Julius Randle was back in this one. What'd you think of Julius?
Early on, he kind of immediately still looked like the ankle was bothering him, just the way he moved around, and got a little nervous, but he was scoring well enough and making correct decisions. So overall, very happy and early on. But early on, I could pretend didn't look like after every layup, he like rounded the corner very wide. He was not trying to take tight turns when he didn't have to. Very much looked like he's coming off an ankle injury. What I would say would be what me and my dad identified while watching.
Yeah, but even in that first minute, he had a nice drive.
Yes.
And he kicked
it. Straight lines worked.
He kicked it. Yeah, straight lines were working for him. He kicked it to Jalen Brunson for a corner three. That was awesome.
Yes, that was really early.
It was the first points of the game. And it was just a good sign to me that Randle was going to like be aggressive and be looking for his teammates. And that really held true.
That held true the whole way.
Throughout, exactly. Like he finished this game, we should say, with, he had 8 assists to go along with 25 points and 12 boards. And that was 8 assists to just 3 turnovers, which for him, that's not a bad ratio at all. We'll take that.
That's more or less as good as it gets with him on his usage and what we usually get from him. So,
but I loved what he brought. It was just a level of physicality and just, he had 2 blow-bys in that first quarter on Bam Adebayo, just against a set Bam. This wasn't like Bam in a closeout. This wasn't a scrambling defense. Bam Adebayo was set. And this is a perennial defensive player of the year candidate. And Julius Randle just blew right by him. That first step looked great. Changing directions was one thing. Julius Randle's defense was not very good. Mm-hmm. But offensively, oh my God, he was a godsend.
He was a breath of fresh air.
We needed him so badly. And
completely opens up the board for everyone else, too. I mean, RJ early in game one was excellent as well. But but to not have pressure on him and to be a bit more of a secret weapon again goes a long way. Takes a lot of pressure off Brunson early, who... Yep. Had his own ankle thing that I think in hindsight makes his game one performance make a lot more sense.
Brunson's a weird one, and I do want to get back to him because he started the game just 1 for 6, and so you're thinking like, oh, he's really this hobbled here, and
really
then he went nuclear and closed the game and brought us home, and so we'll get more into Brunson in a second, but
for sure.
But like Randle, what I really like is, and I put out a video on this on the Talk of Knicks Instagram and on YouTube, but Randle matched up against a 2-3 zone is great for Julius Randle because he catches the ball on the perimeter, and that means he's going to be having a perimeter guy defending him. And they can't stop him from getting into the paint. Like, to beat a 2-3 zone, one of the ways to do it is dribble penetration to get the defense to collapse. Julius Randle can
That's
get...
his favorite thing.
He can get by any guard. He can just... I posted a video of him just going up against Caleb Martin. He got to his outside shoulder and just bullied his way past him. Didn't need to make a move, was just too strong, too overwhelming, and he kicked it out for a hockey assist. RJ Barrett hit a 3. But
yes.
But there were like a few plays like that. Even in crunch time in the fourth quarter, Julius Randle caught the ball with Gabe Vincent on him, and he just backed him down, like bodied him. Kyle Lowry had to come over and help, and Julius just made the right play, kicked it to Josh Hart for one of his 2 huge 3s. So, like, man, Randle was making all the right plays on offense, and I can't say enough. I said it in the video. He's the most important player on this Knicks team to me going forward.
Definitely. He's when he's right, the Knicks' best player by a lot, I guess. Obviously, Brunson, not too far behind, I guess. But when Randle is at playing the best he can play, he's the only guy on the team that was an all-star this year. Like, for... He's really fucking good.
Yeah, and I don't want to downplay. Like, I mean, Jalen Brunson was the best player in the series with Donovan Mitchell in the last
Absolutely.
Series. Like, and he was way better than Julius Randle was, and we know Randle was coming back from an injury as well. But like Jalen Brunson, I mean, that's what the great thing about this team
not
is.
Not to take anything away from him. Just, like, that's how good Randle is at his best.
That's the thing, is like Randle isn't necessarily reliant on like getting officials to call fouls against, you know, in his favor. Like, he is so powerful and so explosive that he can just overwhelm people. And that's not something Jalen Brunson has in his bag. Like, Brunson relies on craft and technique and these little things that sometimes can get taken away in the playoffs when more physicality gets introduced. Julius Randle is the physicality. Like, you can't stop him from doing what he wants to do. Bam Adebayo couldn't do it, and I don't see anyone in the series who can't.
No. If Bam's not doing it, well, that's the only guy who matches up.
And so, the other thing I wanted to say was, like, Bam was the guy guarding him, so Julius Randle would be spacing out to three. Randle hit. He was 3 of 9 from three, but he was a threat the whole game from behind the arc. Bam Adebayo had to leave the paint. So, like, the only rim protection was Kevin Love in some cases. Other cases, it was, like, nobody. And so Bam was leaving the paint to having to go check Randle on the perimeter. It's just the domino effect of his presence means so much to this team. So, yeah, man.
He has the gravity that they need. Another reason to get Grimes in there as well. Opens up for everybody, his dynamic with all them. Like, so, his presence is so important.
I think that's the biggest reason why. During the game, I was beside myself, frankly. Mm-hmm. I hated watching mostly the defense. But Randle just looked really good to me, and I'm very confident that he'll be able to go to Miami and impose his will there too. So, I mean, other guys we should definitely touch on. RJ Barrett started this game really on fire. Like, the offense was kind of running through him and Julius early on because, as we mentioned, Brunson wasn't hitting. Barrett started 6 of 10 from the field in the first half, 4 of 6 from behind the arc. He had 19 points at halftime to lead the team, and he just looked really good, flat out. Like, his good play continues.
He looked very confident. I was, you get a little nervous because he missed his very first shot of the game. I was so happy when he hit the second one because if he goes 0 for 2 to start a game, I think he's probably the guy in the Knicks whose level of play changes the most when he's feeling confident or not confident. So for him to immediately quell that by hitting the second shot of the game, set him up for a very good first half.
And I have another player who I want to have as a contender for that player who, their value fluctuates depending on their confidence, but we'll get to him in a second because he comes off the bench. Let's see. Mitchell Robinson. He was
not his best game.
No, he was fine.
On the whole.
Yeah, Hartenstein was the better center, and I do want to get to more.
And there's a lot of people who think he's just the better matchup against Miami anyway, just what he does. Obviously, they need both of them.
Yeah.
But
no, definitely need both of them.
But Hart stepped up. Hartenstein stepped up.
And then, I think we can kind of move our... Let's just say, like, throughout the game, the Knicks were losing the vast majority of this game. Every time they'd make a run, it seemed like Miami had an answer for it. Guys who were giving us some issues, Gabe Vincent, he went 7 of 17, 4 of 12 from 3. Not great numbers, but it did seem like he and Caleb Martin were kind of the two biggest problems.
They're the ones that were the biggest points of frustration. And Gabe Vincent... And the second half numbers are good. He turned it on. His first half, he starts slow shooting-wise. Because he goes 6 of 10, 3 of 7 from behind the arc in the second half. So he found it there. I do not like facing him. Just, he has become a pest.
He really has, yeah. He's the guy I'm probably the most afraid of outside Jimmy Butler on this team. Like, even, Duncan Robinson has the reputation of being the best shooter on the team, and I think he actually is, but...
Pure shooting, ability, he would be the guy I say, yeah.
And the other thing is that the Knicks, like, kind of face guard him. So there were a couple plays where the Heat got layups or dunks because it was either RJ Barrett or Jalen Brunson really just full-on face guarding Duncan Robinson, not helping off at all. And... I just think that when that's your scheme, everyone else has to be aware of that. Oh, RJ Barrett isn't going to be providing any help on this play because he's stuck to Duncan Robinson.
Stay on Duncan.
And there were some, like, I don't know if it was a miscommunication or just lack of execution on that end that led to that. But, three and a half quarters, this looked like Miami was going to pull this game out, and it would have been a full-on disaster.
Really bad.
But things started to change. I thought Isaiah Hartenstein was a huge catalyst for that. He made a lot of winning plays between setting screens, getting
rebounding,
the offensive rebounds, and the loose ball fouls against him, trying to keep him off the ball. They changed the whole complexion of the game. It was his intensity that I thought, like, sometimes I'll see that when Deuce McBride gets entered into the rotation, like, his intensity changes sort of the chemistry of the game. It felt that way with Hartenstein in the front court yesterday.
Absolutely.
What a stud. It's very nice to get 48 minutes of, like, solid center play.
Yeah.
What a luxury.
They can get, especially against a team that employs Bam Adebayo, that could have become exposed very quickly when, like, Mitch gets into some foul trouble early and all that. But no, Hartenstein stepped up.
So from there is kind of the Jalen Brunson show with some a little Josh Hart mixed in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Jalen Brunson was the closer. He hit that three that led to the four-point play.
Yes.
Which was, maybe a little controversial, but upon
rewatch.
A point
of contention, yeah.
It's like, that was the right call.
It was the right call. I thought, I tweeted about how I'd love for the Knicks to catch a break one time, because that was as the broadcast was talking about how they're going to take the three away and all that. And then immediately they ruled it the same way. So the tweet kind of flopped, but I'm happy that's the way it went.
Yeah, that's a worthwhile trade-off.
Yes.
Hartenstein, that was with like 6:40 left. Then Hartenstein made the free throw. From there on, six minutes left in the game, you had a Jalen Brunson step back. I think that was over Duncan Robinson. They got the matchup that they wanted, even though the Heat were in a zone. This is one of the first times I noticed that they actually got the matchup they wanted with the spacing that they wanted, the Knicks did. And so they got Jalen Brunson matched up on a Duncan Robinson in the left kind of block area, and he just hit a fadeaway jumper. There were just some massive plays. Julius Randle hit Josh Hart for a corner three that was enormous. After that, 4 minutes left in the game, Jalen Brunson came off a screen from Hartenstein, and Hartenstein really hit, I think it was Gabe Vincent, really leveled him with this screen, and it opened up Jalen Brunson, who just pulled up and hit the three, and it was like, man, just that was probably the biggest shot of the game, I think.
Yeah, that was huge relief on both of those. All right, that was when you started to feel like, okay, Knicks are going to survive this one.
So the Knicks were up three at that point. The next significant play, I should say, was the missed shot clock violation. So the Heat actually connected with the rim on their shot, but the officials called a shot clock violation. It nullified a layup from Miami that would have cut the lead to one with 3 minutes left.
Yeah.
Instead, it was a three-point game, Knicks ball, and from there, Jalen Brunson hit a floater, and that made it a five-point game, two-possession game. And that was huge. So, like, it still got dicey from there. Like,
there were points of a potential break that could have been very scary, but we never quite got to that.
Yeah, there was another Josh Hart three, assisted by Julius Randle.
Yes.
There were some big Julius Randle free throws. There was a kind of a boneheaded play where Julius Randle stepped on the out-of-bounds line trying to inbound it.
Yeah, opened it back up just a little bit.
Yeah, creaked the door open for Miami a little bit, but ultimately the Knicks were able to close it out with some more free throws. Josh Hart hit a couple, and he also missed a couple. But they won. It was a huge sigh of relief, and I really do feel much closer to neutral headed into Miami for game three, closer to, like you said, how I did before the series started.
Yeah, but basically I'm kind of back to where we were, because split in Miami, and I sort of always thought Butler has a chance to win two games by himself in this series. I have a feeling he will be back Saturday, and that will be another adjustment that has to be made, get back to him being in the action, but yeah, I feel about the same level of confidence as I am coming in. I would guess the Knicks pull this series out if you're asking me right now.
I said Knicks in six to start, and I'm sticking with that.
Yeah, can't win in six without losing two.
That's exactly right. That's math.
So we took care of one.
you know, we probably should focus a little bit on the downside, which was the Knicks bench in this one. Outside Hartenstein, Emmanuel Quickley only played 9 minutes the entire game. You know, he was the Knicks' third best player this season. It was not debatable. The value he added was critical to this team's the whole identity of it was Emmanuel Quickley coming off the bench and just introducing this level of like spontaneity, right? Like, he's one of those guys that you don't really know. Like, he could pull up from deep, or he can get into the paint. He can pass. Like, he can kind of do a little bit of everything, and he has the bravado. You know, like he'll try anything. And so just that kind of like devil may care attitude, I thought it really always infected the bench in a positive way. And he just has not been able to get it going. Like, whether it's his 3-point shot, he was 0 of 4 from 3. I mean, he was 3 of 3 from 2, which is good. Like, he hit a few floaters.
The ones he took.
He hit back-to-back floaters that were actually pretty important.
Yeah. He very early on hit that floater.
Yep.
And then it felt like they abandoned that. It's like, try it again, man. It felt like we could have worked to get him another inside look at some point.
That's the thing. Like, Quickley, you would think, would be one of the players who would be great against zone.
Yeah.
His 3-point shooting, his ability to attack closeouts, to get into space, to find teammates. Like, he can
just general typically making the right play.
He's smart.
So,
and he hasn't.
It's been the single biggest, like, mystery of this Knicks playoff run, that the fact that the Knicks are even this far with him not contributing nothing, but close to it, as close as we could have thought he would. The fact that they've gotten this far basically without him.
I mean, the first series, he was really kind of a non-factor offensively, but he was still good on defense.
Impacted defense. And
I don't feel like he's really done that against Miami. I feel like he's been kind of in the wrong spots. He's been very jumpy. He's been, like, you know, falling for these ball fakes and pump fakes and trying to get into passing lanes, but is taking gambles that aren't paying off. And it's just, it has not looked good for him at all. 9 minutes for the game for, like I said, our third best player. That's dire. Like,
when our two best players are hobbled. Known to be hobbled right now, like, it wasn't a secret for him not to be able to be a spark and provide any relief to them. They need more than that. We've gotten basically nothing at all from him this playoffs. Game 5, he was not amazing, but good. Like, it worked. They won the game, and he helped. But this Miami series, he's back to having not contributed so far. So that's, you know,
there was some speculation.
Big one to watch for.
There was some speculation about his role changing a little bit. I think Fred Katz wrote an article in The Athletic about his pick-and-roll usage dropped precipitously. It was like he was running 5 pick and rolls a game during the regular season, and now it's like 1. And some of that is probably minutes per game as well, but that is a noticeable change in role. But I don't want to chalk it up to that. Like, he's a basketball player.
If he's
getting opportunities, and he hasn't looked confident out there.
Yeah, bottom line is he needs to hit a couple more shots, because it's not a lack of open looks that he's, you know, been granted. Like, we said for game 1 and on the whole the Knicks had open looks, they just didn't really hit any of them, so that's why that game was not fun. But if Quickley hits a couple more open looks, he probably plays with a ton of confidence in the other facets of the game and gets more run, and we see a couple more pick and roll opportunities for him. So hit one of these open looks and start feeling good, dude.
Yeah, there should be kind of like a cascading effect there. But the other guy was Obi Toppin. He only played 10 minutes, and he was pretty dreadful. And
his worst game of this playoffs.
Easily, yeah, because he's been very good in these playoffs. So I don't want to kill him for that. He had one bad game. He took two shots, like you said, airballed them both. He was very bad on defense.
It was like back-to-back possessions, too.
Like, he was hanging his head on defense, too, like just making bad plays.
Yeah. They take him off the floor. He looked
dejected.
Dejected, I was going to say distraught on the bench, like... He didn't understand what got into him last night.
Yeah, he just didn't have it. And that's, you know, we said going into the series that depth was the Knicks' strength. They had a deeper team than the Heat, and it has not borne out that way at all. And so I think we got to be looking for a shift.
Need to get that back.
Desperately need that back. And I think they will. And I do think that Grimes starting, even if Jimmy Butler's playing, that's fine. Like, I don't need Josh Hart to play matched up every minute on Jimmy Butler.
Not at all.
The Knicks team defense can get this done.
They have other guys that can guard. I'm sure when Hart's in the game, ideally he's the one on Butler when he's in, because Jimmy's the dynamic offensive player on Miami's team. But we don't need to mirror every minute.
Yeah, and Hart can still get the same number of minutes, can still close games. But I think I'd love to see him come off the bench and provide it, because the Knicks need it, man.
That group needs him. And him as like a spark, fun piece is huge. That game one of the Cleveland series.
Did we give Brunson enough love for closing that game out, man? Because he, like we said, he was 1-for-6 in the first half, and he completely flipped.
Completely flipping it. The fortitude within him really, really showed out. We know he has the ankle thing. I'm sure everybody's got issues we don't know about going on health wise. So like when you get off to a bad start like that, you got to commend him for having a very strong second half and particularly fourth quarter.
Yeah, man, he was in the second half. He was 9-of-13 from the field, 5-of-7 from three. He had 23 points in that second half. It's tremendous. It was just shot making is what it was, and that's what we've been used to from Jalen Brunson all season, is just getting the ball in the basket, shot making, and he got back to that in the second half, and I hope he can carry it on as the series goes on.
Yeah, ideally we get a little more of it early, but hey, if this is the formula, it works. We need him. He's basically he's the best fourth quarter like go to scorer we've had in forever, like since Melo. Like,
yeah,
only guy we've had that like we need to go get a good shot off. Go.
And that's the thing about Brunson, is like in the first game, in game one, and even the first half of game two, it didn't feel like he was like creating any space for himself.
No.
And even his shot was, he was so short on everything. Like, he was stepping into threes, momentum coming forward. Usually you see guys miss off the back rim with that. He was still like barely grazing the rim, and it was like, okay, there's something wrong with his ankle.
Something's
like
up. He's either exhausted or injured, and we found out it's injured.
And then second half rolls around, and it all went away.
New life.
Who knows why, but it couldn't have happened at a better time. So, I don't know, man. I think that's kind of all I got for now.
That's about it. I would assume we see Jimmy Butler when we get back to Miami.
Yeah, I know. He was doing a lot of, like, smiling to the Knicks crowd. He looked very confident, like, this team could barely beat these guys without me.
Yeah, but which I get.
I get it, too.
I get the feeling if I were him.
It's just not really how basketball works, you know? Like, when you're the underdog, you can play a little loose, play a little free. Like, the Knicks were probably uptight a little bit, you know what I mean? Like, they had all the pressure on them. They had to win that game. And
already down one.
There's a little bit of that, like, 16 seed versus 1 seed. You know, obviously the 1 seed wins almost every time, but sometimes you start to get a little tight.
It can be a little closer than you want.
All right. Well, I think that should do it. I mean, we both still like Knicks in this series, and I don't think that's just pure fandom. I think that I do think they kind of started to find something against the zone on offense, and just Julius Randle's presence is going to be a tough thing to match up with going forward for Miami. So even introducing Jimmy Butler back with this team, I think I still feel pretty good.
I feel like
it's just defense. You have to clean it up. The defense has to clean it up,
and you trust that Tibbs at this point will make those adjustments on the players to execute those. But it feels like in these first two games, we sort of got Miami's everyone besides Jimmy and Bam. We got their like best collective punch. And it's still a split, so it's gonna be hard for them to I think repeat the same. You know,
it's gonna be a good series.
They very well might, but it's gonna be very impressive. They can keep this level of play up. The Knicks' true talent level hopefully bears out.
All right. Anything else? We're good?
I think we're there.
All right, folks. Well, listen, if you're still listening, we appreciate you. Make sure you go and subscribe on podcast platforms. Go to our social media at Talkin' Knicks on Twitter, on Instagram. We're on YouTube now. Make sure you follow us, subscribe. We're putting out
follow
video.
Everywhere. Check it out. Interact.
Breakdowns. Breakdowns coming out. Fun stuff. There's several days in between, so there's going to be plenty to dissect between now and Saturday. So we appreciate you listening. Leave a review. Do all that fun stuff. Yeah. In
we
the
love
meantime,
you guys.
We love you. We never so we don't say that enough.
Like I love you, the listener.
All right, folks. Until then, hey, let's go Knicks.
Knicks tape.
Ball in Play 2, presented by DraftKings, kicks off on May 5th. Head over to the Warehouse Games channel to catch Game 1. Get some skin in the game and download the DraftKings app right now. Don't forget to use our promo code WAREHOUSE. That's promo code WAREHOUSE only at DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours.